Hi, I'm Adam Jackson, and I work for Red Hat on Fedora and RHEL, and in particular I work on the X-Window system and just various graphics-related pieces of the world.
And I'm Jack Abutbol of the Fedora marketing team, and we're here talking about Fedora 11. So a lot of the improvements that have gone into Fedora 11 have focused around the user experience, and one of the big features that we're sort of pretty happy about is kernel mode setting. And I just wanted to know if there's anything you thought we should know about that.
Sure, I can talk about that. A kernel mode setting is it's kind of a neat trick where we had all this logic for in the X server. Historically, the X server has been this big process, lives in user space, needs a lot of things from the kernel in terms of support services, but really also goes out of its way to do a lot of stuff for itself. And one of the things it did was mode setup. Mode is a jargon term. It just talks about the monitor. You know, it's how big the display is, what the refresh rate is, whether it's interlaced or not, that kind of thing. And we did this in user space for a long time. The X server would kind of map part of the video card into its own address space and poke at some registers, and then that's how the mode would get set. And what this means is that whenever you have to give control back to the kernel, like when you VT switch or when you go to suspend, you have to undo all of this work. And so things like VT switching, which is how you do fast user switching, would be very, very slow. And you'd have to basically tear down everything to get to the text mode state that you started from and then put it all back in the second X server to kind of get to whatever that X session wanted. Most of the time, this is just wasted effort. And so one of the nice things that kernel mode setting lets us do is it lets us move the logic for that into the kernel. Doing this gives you a lot of things. It lets you set the mode much, much earlier in the boot process. And since you've now got a kernel driver responsible for output setup, you can get this. Not only can you get this done earlier, but you can make the display setup consistent among multiple X servers. So you can have very, very fast switching between user sessions. So if you've got a multi-user machine, you can kind of flip away, and the next user gets it just immediately, which is really, really cool. It also makes suspend and resume a lot more reliable, since we're doing basically all the output setup for ourselves now, rather than relying on the BIOS to get it right for us when we come back from resume. Resume's a lot more reliable than it used to be, which is pretty sweet. The other thing that kind of comes along with this is that in order to set up the video mode in the kernel, you're sort of giving responsibility for memory management of the video card to the kernel itself. And this enables a lot of features that are really, really important. The ability to do redirected OpenGL, for example. We had, you know, historically, if you run compiz and you kind of run an OpenGL application, then you spin the cube, the GL application would just kind of stick to the screen. It wouldn't rotate with the cube. Now we can make that work correctly and be able to transform everything as though it's one solid piece. And then also, this is kind of a requirement for the graphical aspect of Plymouth, the new boot manager, which is that, you know, we set the display mode very, very early in boot up. At the right size, Plymouth comes up and says, "Oh, sweet, a mode." Does some rendering of the boot splash, and then hands that image directly to the X server, and then GDM can do this nice crossfade effect into the background artwork. So the whole thing is really pretty smooth, and we're pretty happy with how it's turned out so far.
Yeah, it's it looks pretty slick in the beta and preview stuff. A lot of the work that was the precursor to this was done in like the two previous releases leading up to this point. You want to talk a little bit about that and how that foundation was laid, you know, like more or less a year ago, and like kind of how we ended up where we are today, and how that's kind of been more or less the trend in a lot of features that we've been working on the past year.
Sure. This kind of came about from two different ends at once. First, we had the old graphical boot manager, RHGB, which tried to do some of the same things. It tried to set up graphics very early in boot up, so you'd have pretty output displaying everything. But it did this by launching another copy of the X server. And so you had the X server come up, do a bunch of stuff, and very early in boot up in this kind of weird constrained environment that the X server was really never intended to work in. And because we were still doing user space mode setting, all this reliability problem that I mentioned with suspend also happened with VT switching at all. And so a lot of the, now you were forcing VT switch every single time. You'd have to bring it up, one X server up to do RHGB, tear it down, that's a VT switch, and then bring it back in for the GDMX server. And also, because you were doing this all the time, the screen blinked a lot, it looked very, very seizure happy. It was it was pretty awful. It never really worked as well as we wanted. We basically had to fix mission, you know, stop ship bugs in it on every single release for no particular reason. And we really just got tired of holding on to it. So back about FC6, FC7, we had prototyped Plymouth at the time as, you know, we can do this. We can, if we have a simple frame buffer device, you can use Cairo to draw the images, just put it up to the screen. It's fast enough. It's simple. It looks a lot nicer. And, you know, this is possible. We can do better. So we had that aspect of it. The other aspect of it really came from the more finished user experience end of things. Once you're in the session, it's been pretty clear for a while that you want a compositor. You want something like Compiz. Maybe not Compiz exactly, but you want a compositor because it allows you to do a lot of things that the classic X windowing model doesn't let you do. It lets you have, you know, nice application animations and transitions between states. It lets you, you know, it also allows you to have a more consistent rendering experience. You know, in principle, things can show up on the screen synced with the refresh rate of the monitors. Everything kind of pops and it, you know, looks solid.
It's more fluid, yeah.
Yeah, you don't see the tearing as things get dragged around and that kind of thing. So we kind of knew that there was going to be a compositing experience for a while. But in order to really finish that, you need to do all the hard parts of compositing. You know, getting the compositor up is one thing, but then OpenGL had kind of this pass-through mode for performance for direct rendered applications, which is why when you ran Compiz, but also had an OpenGL application running, the GL application would kind of stick to the screen, and it might look okay most of the time, but it's actually pretty, but it's not correct. It doesn't blend with the rest of the desktop. You can't get the shading effects. If you put another application over top of it, they flicker and they fight, and it's just awful. Video had the same problem. Video had the problem where it would expect there to be a color key region on the screen that the hardware would then take over and scan out the video directly to that. That doesn't work if your windows are transformed, because now, you know, the color key's moved away.
Yeah.
But you haven't told the hardware about it. So we needed to finish kind of the video and OpenGL aspects of the composited desktop. And really to do that, you need a lot of the kernel memory management work that I was talking about earlier. You need to have the ability to redirect rendering without telling the client about it, so that if you switch from Metacity to Compiz and then back out, it still works. So you need to be able to switch that on the fly. You need kind of more of a kernel level awareness of where these objects are that you're drawing to, so that the whole thing works, because you really don't have enough information to do that in the X server. So given that we needed kernel memory management, and given that we needed a better boot splash experience, you might as well do both, right? And so kernel mode setting was really one of these features that came out for free. Was now that we've got kernel awareness of memory management, we can also add kernel awareness of output management and have it all very, very early. So that all started basically FC6, FC7. We switched to Plymouth for some ships in 8, I think.
Was it 8 or was it 9?
I think it might have been 9. It all bleeds together, unfortunately. For Fedora 10, we had kernel mode setting for some Intel chips, and now, excuse me, some Radeon chips. And now in 11, we've got it for basically all Intel chips and Radeon's first gen through fifth generation. The new 600 and 700 series we have code for, but it's still a little flaky, so we're not turning it on by default. Likewise, for the NVIDIA chips, we have from NV20 to NV40, G70, we have some code for it in the kernel, but it's not quite as reliable as we like. So it's still something you can kind of opt into if you want to get the experience, but we're hoping that it should stabilize significantly over the lifetime of F11. By F12, it should be really, really nice.
Yeah, well, if it doesn't work so well and it's not so stable, we now have the option of presenting people with a blue screen of death.
Yeah, so that's a feature that I need to make sure gets in for 11. One of the really cool things that used to happen, was that if you panicked while X was running, it just halted. Like, you had no idea what happened. Oh, X froze. Man, X is so unreliable. Well, actually, that was your network driver that caused that problem, but we're really sorry. But, you know, X gets the blame. And so now, because, you know, X was running, and that's all you saw. So now you have the ability to, since the kernel knows where the frame buffer is, you can tell it on panic to just dump the panic message to the screen, because you're doing it for the, you know, you've already got a console driver running. That's how the text console works now in kernel mode setting. So you can just say, all right, well, I panicked. That's a shame. But now I can just blast the contents of the panic message onto the screen rather than just having it going off into la-la land. So, you know, it still breaks because software breaks, but we should be able to get more information about why it's breaking, be able to identify a lot of the reliability problems that we've had in the past, and do a better job of getting those fixed in the future. So that's helpful, too.
That's cool. Is it definitely going to be a blue screen, though? Or did we have the designers take a look at that yet? Or
I don't think so. So, I mean, you have options, right? Have you ever seen a kernel panic on a Mac?
Yeah, sure.
Where it comes up with, you know, kind of grays out the
grays
whole screen.
Grays out the screen, yeah, and the thing comes
and
up.
And you got this lovely translated message in like seven languages on top that says, by the way, we're really sorry.
Your computer
failed. Aw. So, no one's looked at the user experience end of that. It's, in some sense, you don't want to do too much from the panic handler because you just panicked. You know, something went really wrong, you might not be able to get anything on the screen at all. So in some sense, the less you can do there, the better it's going to be for you. And the gray out that happens on a Mac is actually just it's one alpha blend, right? It's just one blit of this image they've already got pops onto the screen. So they're really doing as little as possible. We're sort of doing a little bit more because we're trying to walk into memory and figure out, you know, I panicked along this stack trace. So, you know, that's better, but it's worse, right? But I don't think anyone's actually looked at the user interaction experience there. And I think probably what we're just going to do initially, at least, is just, you know, white text, black background. And it'll look ugly, but it's better than locking up completely. So
that's a big pain when that happens.
You're telling me, man. It happens to me all the time.
So what do you think is are the coolest features or the coolest feature that could probably come out of something like this? Like, what's the plan look like coming down the road?
I think I had an answer for this at one point, and it's not coming to me anymore. It's sort of right now I'm in this mode where I've got, you know, blocker bugs that I'm trying to fix, and I'm not really thinking about the future so much. But one of the things that's really nice about this is, since we're doing this in kind of this incremental fashion and, you know, moving slowly the bits that we need down into the kernel and kind of taking a lot of the complex logic out of the X server and putting it down in the kernel where it belongs, as kind of a check on this to make sure that it works, we've also had other display servers that we use to just kind of do this minimal environment and bring it up and see, does this work at all? Okay, it does. Sweet. Now, is it good enough to work on X? And so that way you can kind of isolate, is the problem in the kernel, is the problem in the X server? The nice thing about that is that X is not my favorite Windows system. It's a lovely piece of engineering, you know, and we'll probably be running X applications forever. But there's some fundamental limitations with it that you just can't fix. Things like you pop up a menu in OpenOffice and then Alt-Tab stops working. Why does that happen? Well, I could tell you, but it's just a detail of how the input model works. The output model doesn't work either. The output model, it has coordinate limits that are just arbitrary. You can't do a screen bigger than 32,000 pixels on a side. That sounds like a lot, but on a 100 DPI screen, that's only like 20-odd feet. So if you're doing a big display wall, you're going to run out. The rendering model doesn't really work. It doesn't really match what applications want to do. There's a whole bunch of things that are just not ideal about X. So it would be nice to have this other Windows system that you can kind of run an X server under, you know, run your X apps on, but be able to move on to a better rendering environment that actually matches what your app wants to do. And so that's what I'm really hoping for. Whether that ends up being Wayland, which is the demo server that we've been doing this with, or whether it ends up being something else, you know, time will tell. But the ability to move beyond X and not lose the hardware support that X has is really compelling.
It's definitely a step for the future. I mean, could potentially, like you said, see a new like Windows system.
Yeah, and I mean, we've learned a lot. X is great, but it's a
dinosaur.
It's almost as old as I am, and I suppose we'll be almost as old as I am forever. It's, you know, we had some really good ideas. We also made some really big mistakes, and Windows has rewritten their display system by now. Apple's rewritten their display system by now. We've learned how to do these things correctly, and it would be kind of nice to have that for the free software world as well.
That's cool. So speaking of the free software world, a lot of the work that was done on the kernel mode setting stuff was also done upstream.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered if you wanted to share any of the experience on how that went, collaborating with the upstream and working with people maybe from other distributions, and how that all panned out.
Well, from other distributions, we've had varying degrees of interest. I think Ubuntu's trying to do Plymouth at some point in the future. Somebody's got a personal package repo for it that it kind of works. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people like where we're going with it, but just aren't ready to make the jump yet. And that's totally fair. As far as the upstream development process goes, you know, getting these things into X, it's been pretty straightforward. We have a lot of conceptual buy-in from X as far as, you know, where we want to take the system, why we want to do things the way we do. People generally agree that where we're going with this is the right thing to do. And in the kernel, it's been a little bit more of a hassle because there's been some contention over, you know, whose Git tree do you pull from? Who are we basing this work off of? Does Intel have their own tree? Does Radeon have their own tree? Is there one central DRM tree to work on? Historically, there's been a DRM tree that has had just the kernel modules in it, but has had kernel modules for both Linux and BSD. Well, we've changed things so rapidly that a lot of the BSD code is sort of rotted, and it never worked particularly well, but now it doesn't work at all. So we've kind of moved towards having just a full Linux tree that's got, you know, new DRM patches in it, and then basically treating Linus's tree as the upstream. Everybody kind of bases off that. If there's conflicts, we work it out. But so for the most part, it's been a little bit of an adjustment, but we've gotten there. I think it's been a little bit better, better now than it was before. We've also seen a lot of interest from the two vendors that I've worked on, that I mentioned, AMD and Intel, as far as getting their chips working in this sort of scenario and having that be part of their plans for the future. Intel has gone completely nuts with this, which is totally awesome. They've actually, in the Git driver, in the 2D driver now, they dropped support for non-kernel mode setting. So you can't do it any other way in the future on Intel chips, which is good, because, I mean, yeah, you want both paths for a while to kind of make sure you're doing the right thing, but eventually that becomes more of a support hassle. So on Intel now, you just can't do it any other way. So that's pretty cool. Radeon has needed some of the memory management features more first, because starting with about the R500 chips, which was X plus four digits, X1500, X1900, that area, you can't actually do a lot of the 2D acceleration without having a kernel component, because you need to do DMA. DMA has to get set up by the kernel, because we don't let the users scribble to arbitrary places in memory. So they've needed some more of the memory management features first, but once you've got that, it really becomes compelling to have the rest of the output setup story as well. And, you know, there were a couple of occasions where we're talking to AMD people saying, you know, this is what we want to do. Well, why do you want to do that? Tell you what, you can watch it boot. This is what we're going for. This is the experience that we're after. And after you see it, you really get, oh, right. This is, you know, we can do better. We can look like we're professionals and not just crazy hackers in the bedroom, which is, you know, legitimate, fine, wonderful, but we can also do something good. So
yeah,
that's been really cool. And a lot, the buy-in both from the vendor community and from the upstream community has been pretty solid. So excited.
Yeah. Speaking of hackers in the bedroom. So it's, we finally got to Fedora 11, which has been a long road, and certainly it might have started out as you know, hackers in the bedroom a little bit.
Yeah.
And you know, it's been a few years, and the project and everyone around it in the community has grown in significant ways. I wanted to get your thoughts on that, and what you thought being involved in Fedora means to you, and you know, how you've been involved with stuff for at least a couple of years, just to you know, get your thoughts on that, and how everything has been, and how it's motivated you to keep doing what you've been doing.
So, one that I have to make a confession here. I didn't use Fedora before I came to Red Hat. I had used Red Hat Linux way back in the day, like 7.1 or so. And it was fine. You know, it was an OS, but because I was kind of the type A nerd, I was like, I really, you know, I want to do my own thing. So I ran, I used to run Gentoo for a while, and then I ran Slacker before that. I know. It was, I love the Gentoo guys. They do some, yeah, they do some cool stuff, but after a while, I'm like, I don't want to build the world. This, I don't have time for this. One of the things that working on the distro has, as well as working on an upstream project that kind of just scratched my itch, one of the things that's really done for me is tried to give me, it's given me kind of a perspective on, you know, this can't just work for me. This can't just be something that I managed to cobble together in my bedroom. This has to be something that not only can I reasonably, well, you know, I can reasonably expect to give to technology enthusiasts, but that I, you know, I'm going to have to do this for RHEL at some point too. And I would like not to be spending all my time just fixing it up to make it work reliably in RHEL. So I kind of have this, you know, there's a product mentality behind it too. You're not just doing a technology demo. You're also trying to give a finished product. Occasionally, I wish more of Fedora felt this way. It sometimes seems like, it sometimes seems like people push out updates in, you know, for 9 and 10 right now that don't really need to happen. It's like, okay, yeah, upstream released a new bug fix version, but how big are those bug fixes? Do they actually fix problems that users are having? Is it, or are they adding new features that actually destabilize what you've already got? And I think that's actually one of the biggest challenges that Fedora faces right now, is having a mentality that says this is not just a technology demo. This is also about the active integration and quality aspect of it. And I think that's one of our biggest challenges right now. But it's been really cool to see all the things that we've gotten right in that time. I mean, power management is such a better story now. Display management is such a better story now. We have better hardware support for webcams and for, you know,
for a lot of stuff,
The fingerprint readers, yeah, and for Bluetooth devices. I mean, everything works so much better now. It's really shocking to go back to FC5 when I just started and compare that to where we are now. And so it's been really cool to see, you know, the model is working, but I, you know, we need even more of a quality focus than we've had before. We do a lot of great technology primary development, but we need both. And I think that's, you know, that's both the exciting thing and the challenging thing for me.
That's cool. There's, we've come a long way, but there's certainly, a lot of ways to go. And
they never lack for something to do. This is actually one of the cool things about working on X is anytime I can always look and say, man, that's broken. We should do it better. There's always something else to do, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, time would probably run out before little bugs and fixes on X to work run out, but we're pretty much all out of time, so I just want to thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And you still going to that Buckethead concert the week of release?
Oh, man, I need to get down to the Middle East and buy my tickets for that, because I feel bad paying the Ticketmaster fee for that. It's something like 30% overhead just to get it from Ticketmaster. Thank you for the privilege of letting me buy a ticket from you. God, people. Yeah. But yeah, probably going to do that. There's actually a bunch of shows coming up in Boston over the next couple months that I'm really excited about. So should be fun.
That's good. Well, thanks for your work and thanks for your time. And thanks. And we'll try to hit you up again the next time a release comes around to see what fun stuff you're up to.
Cool. I look forward to it.
All right.